welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Hot stuff.
It is the hottest of stuff. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com.
It's cold out there this evening.
Podcast number, if you can even believe it, podcast number 50 for the group here. The big 50.
Wow.
Doesn't seem like 50.
Feels like yesterday, guys.
Time flies when you're talking about sports and not even really.
And we're all three here
about it too much.
For maybe the first time.
We're all three together.
For maybe the first time in, I'd say a long time. We're all three here. Luke is on the phone, joining us from a remote location. And Andy's here in studio, and I'm here in studio with Andy Stevens and Luke Johnson. I'm Owen Main. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast number 50 from San Luis Obispo, California. And yes, it's pretty hot stuff. Welcome, guys. I haven't seen Andy. What have you been up to?
It may be cold outside, but it's hot in the studio. enjoying the holiday season.
Yeah.
Was kind of under the weather there for a while. Got that stomach flu that was going around, and that was a brutal one, man.
I heard it was like Hantavirus or something crazy.
I kind of felt like I was in a war hospital or something with major injuries to my torso. It was very painful.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No fun. But I got to spend a lot of time with the family, and
that's good.
Getting back after it at work now, I'm kind of swamped as it is, so I was glad to at least get a little bit of time to come on out here and
come and do a cast.
Talk about what's going on with the Lakers in the NFL playoffs.
Andy, what was your favorite? Did you get a chance to watch any bowl games?
The Beef O'Brady Bowl.
What was the best bowl game that you watched?
Well, I liked seeing Oregon take it to Kansas State.
There you go.
And then that definitely rose a lot of questions at that point. Well, Oregon should have played Alabama in the championship game, because that national championship game was really disappointing.
That's crap.
I mean, is that... That's maybe one of the worst title games I think I've ever seen, as far as one team being overmatched and having absolutely nothing go their way.
Yeah.
And a lot of Notre Dame apologists will say, well, they had a lot of calls go against them early in the game that really changed momentum. That's a big part of the deal, especially when you're playing a team as strong as Alabama. You need to have everything go right for you. Well, you know, Notre Dame proved pretty much throughout the entire game that they couldn't do anything offensively. So,
Luke, what was the best bowl game that you got a chance to see, if you got a chance to watch very many of them?
You know what? Yeah, and I really can't speak comprehensively because I've been so busy.
Yeah, but, I mean, I didn't watch hardly any bowls.
The one that I really did see that this was a lot of fun was the game. And what was the bowl here? It was played in San Antonio. It was the game between Texas and Oregon State.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the Heart of Texas Bowl or something like that. No,
yeah,
I can't
it was the Alamo Bowl.
Alamo Bowl, right, of course.
The Alamo Bowl. And, Oregon State was blowing them out. It was 20-10 at the half. I mean, it was a lot. It was not that close, really. It was all Oregon State. And, it was 27-17 going to the fourth, and Oregon State seemed like they were in control, and I think Texas scored like 10 points in 3.5 minutes.
Don't mess with Texas.
Yeah, it took the game. It was pretty exciting. It was 31-27, so that was a pretty cool game to watch.
Right on, right on. A game that just got over that I know Andy listened to on the radio was the Lakers, and it's the first real
speaking
topic.
Speaking of San Antonio.
Hey-yo. Lakers were in San Antonio on the second night of a Houston Texas back-to-back.
Texas two-step.
They were in Houston last night and went to San Antonio today. They went there without Powell. They went there without Dwight Howard.
Jordan Hill.
Jordan Hill, too. So they had Ron Artest, I think, playing backup center.
No, he starts at the
four. Okay.
And Sacre starts in the middle, and then they bring in Jameson. So Jameson finally has a chance to get some
minutes. But he was playing center.
No, they bring in Earl Clark to back up Sacramento to play center.
Right.
So
that all being said,
I mean that's Clark had 22 points tonight though, and he did have it was a desperation three at the end, but the Lakers were down three with about 10 seconds left. Kobe got a look at a three, missed it. Earl Clark got the rebound, missed his attempt at a three-pointer, but he did score 22 points, and the Lakers were down 17 and came all the way back to get within three, but. So since too late.
Since they got back to 500 and Steve Nash came back, they've now lost, I think, like five or six straight games. They're five or six games under.
They're five in a row.
There might be, I think they're six games under 500 now.
Five under 500. When they lose to the Thunder on Friday, they will be six games under 500.
Talk about a tough road trip.
Well, they're going to be back in L.A. to play the Thunder.
Well,
but
yeah, talk about a tough few really games matter. In a row.
I'd actually rather, you know, they probably do better on the road now than they are doing at home. Yeah, they're absolutely just
it
a joke at home.
So it doesn't look good. They lost to Houston. They didn't even get close, I don't think. San Antonio, they came up just a little bit short. And now they're five games under 500, and I heard somebody say that on the radio today, because I was listening to the radio on my way to work, on Colin Cowherd's show, he said that if the Lakers go 500 against playoff teams from here on out, they have to go like 21-6 against the rest of the league to even get to like 45 wins and make the playoffs. Like, because that's kind of the playoff... The playoff threshold a lot of the time is about 45.
That's about 45.
So I guess number one question, and we'll get to the playoff question in a little bit, and I'll start with you, Luke. What's been the biggest, and I know you're not like a Laker fan necessarily, but what do you think? you could be classified a hater by some. What do you think the biggest disappointment from the Lakers was this year, so far this year? Like, who do you think... Who or what situation has disappointed you? Well, that's second, but first, like what player is the biggest disappointment for you?
I think Powell is the easy scapegoat, but I don't think that's really the answer.
I agree with you. Yeah.
I don't like Dwight Howard's heart. I think he just seems apathetic, and I know that he still puts up great numbers some nights, but I just don't like his face. I mean, he doesn't seem like he plays intensely at all, and. He's one of those guys who plays well because he's big, he's long, and he's like an athletic freak. But he's definitely not a number one guy, which he proved in Orlando, and now it makes sense because that's definitely Kobe's team when you watch those two play. And but overall, I would just say the Lakers defensively have been so disappointing.
I was going to say that too.
Transition defense is horrid.
Yeah, I have to agree with you with Dwight Howard, because when I said that guys would be injured, I thought he would be one of the guys that was injured, and that would be kind of an easy out for him. But he hasn't been injured, right? He's been playing most games.
So he's Dwight?
Yeah.
Oh, he's had back issues the whole season. Yeah, but he hasn't been out 100%.
But he's on the floor. He's the one of the few guys who's actually been on the floor. And when he's on the floor, you would think that if you have Kobe, who's a proven entity, that, you know, even in really bad seasons, what were the Lakers, like the sixth seed when they took...
I think it was six or seven. Yeah.
When they took Phoenix to like five games back in the day.
Right.
They won the first two in Phoenix and then lost the last three. So even then, when it was Kobe Bryant and freaking Smush Parker in the backcourt with Sasha playing a big role, the Lakers were still pretty good, right? So now you have this guy who's supposedly, you know, one of the most dominant forces in the middle in the whole entire game, you know, league. And
he's no Kwame Brown, right?
Well, Kwame Brown was the starting center on that team. And so it really does make you wonder, what's really going on here? Are the Lakers that... tore up? Where is Dwight Howard providing anything except making Pau Gasol worse and absolutely clogging up the middle? I mean, I don't know. I kind of agree with you there, Luke. Yeah. Andy?
Here's the question. I mean, anytime you have, you know, Twin Towers, it's a great thing, but tell me how Dwight Howard is better than, say, Pau Gasol. Imagine if it was Pau getting all those touches.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see...
Career-wise,
Dwight Howard has done.
I think offensively, they're definitely equals, and I would even go as far as to say that Powell is more talented, brings more to the table offensively than Howard does.
Yeah. Who's been your biggest disappointment, Andy?
To be honest with you, Kobe.
Okay.
Kobe's been my biggest disappointment.
Ooh, Luke's gonna like this. Tell me why.
You know, at this point in his career, Kobe should have figured out, I guess the best way to put it is, every possible way you can be a leader on a team. And it seems like this team needs him to be, and when Nash was out especially, more of a facilitator, you know, more of a guy that kind of gets everybody going. I remember at earlier points in his career, in fact, when they were winning championships two in a row there in 08 and 09, throughout that season, he was basically not scoring even in the first half and just trying to get everybody else involved in whatever he could. It's now it seems like for some reason, now that, they brought in Howard, his ego has kind of taken over a little bit, and he feels the need for some reason to try to assert himself as the guy.
To maintain alpha dog status.
And, yeah, and score 40 a night when that's not what they need. I mean, the formula that I've seen so far this season, every single quarter has basically been the exact same thing. They come out. They have no, you know, intensity
energy,
at the beginning of
the
quarter. They let the other team get ahead. They try to scramble and come back. You know, Howard is getting the ball stripped from him in the post pretty much every other time. It's getting stripped out of his hands. He's not keeping it in good positions, not keeping the ball low.
He's not
valuing the ball. And then at the end of the quarter, give the ball to Kobe, let him get triple teamed, do some – you know, turn around, spinning overhand, two-hand overhand pass at the basket. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It makes no sense.
But you blame Kobe for that, you think?
I blame Kobe for the
over Dwight
chemistry issues. Because,
interesting. Okay.
Because, you know, you bring in D'Antoni. He's kind of a free-reign guy. And that's another thing that I think that is really hobbling the Lakers right now is there's no structure. I don't see any structure, offensively or defensively, you know. D'Antoni's offense is just kind of a thing. Let's get the ball in Steve Nash's hand, high screen roll, you know, do maybe some kind of outside handoff weave type of stuff to try to get some penetration in the middle. But I'm not even seeing that. And on defense, they're not doing anything. They're not choosing a side. You know, back when the Lakers were winning championships with Phil, they were at least making a guy choose a side, you know, and funneling the guy with the ball to the baseline. Now they're just standing in front of guys and getting crossed over and just, I don't know. There's just so many things I could go on and on, but
I want you to go on and on.
I digress.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting when you get a bunch of new players, and Kobe's been through this situation before, which is one of the reasons why I thought it would kind of work when Malone and Payton came. But Malone and Payton were old grizzled vets, and Dwight Howard and, you know, Steve Nash certainly is that, but Dwight Howard is still kind of thinking he's at the prime of his career. It seems like he's almost taken this season for granted at some level. There's not a lot of urgency from the big man in the middle. And I don't want to blame the guy, but you know, something's just not working. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens if the Lakers don't make the playoffs or if they exit in the first round.
Well,
you know, both of which are big, distinct possibilities.
Well, talk about Howard. One small thing you do have to give him credit for is he was missing a lot of free throws at the beginning of the season. He has seemed to turn that around.
Yeah.
He's going at a clip of about 65% now,
right,
since he was going at about 45. So,
but everybody keeps expecting this team to click and start reeling off, you know, 8 out of 10, you know, because that's basically what they have to do now for the rest of the year to kind of make the playoffs even.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, is that even a possibility? Do they even still have a chance at making the playoffs, do you think, Luke?
I mean, it's
going to take some teams taking a dump, I think. It's going to take some teams,
you know,
just going down.
It's like a circus. You know, you watch a circus, and you're amazed, and great things happen. And you know, and there might actually be talented people who work in a circus. And then you walk out going, wow, you know, like, that wasn't just a split circus. You know, there were some pretty talented people flipping around on all their crap up on the top of the, you know, tent. But, and that's kind of how I see the
Lakers
here. I mean, can they make the playoffs? I mean, absolutely, especially when you're chasing the eighth seed right now, which is Denver, who's 20-16, 4.5-game lead right now in the Lakers, and teams like Portland, who are 19-15, and you know, up only 4.5 games, can they make the playoffs? Sure. I mean, can I see Denver and Portland, you know, dropping off a little bit, and the Lakers winning 8 out of 10 one time, and then kind of tying the thing there and then pulling it out because they have more experience? Sure. But it's not a matter of if they get in the playoffs. It's what happens when they get in the playoffs. And I think we all know the answer to that question.
Yeah, at this rate, getting out of the first round is not, I mean, at the beginning of the year, we're thinking, okay, maybe they'll be a 4 or 5 seed. And if they are, then they'll win the first round game because they got veterans. But now they're going to be the 8 or 7 or 8 seed if they make the playoffs. Now they're playing Oklahoma City, or who's in second place right now, Luke? The Clippers?
It'd be the Clippers, the the Thunder, and then San Antonio is like it's like a half game behind.
Yeah, like first round, Clippers sweep the Lakers out of the playoffs. I mean, can you imagine the upheaval at Staples Center for the Lakers? I mean, you don't know if Dwight Howard's going to get re-signed at that point.
Right.
Kobe might say, no, I don't want this guy.
I will say I was wrong about that. Clippers are going to win the Pacific, and you know, the top honestly, four seed for the Lakers.
We need like
an
I was wrong
question.
Drop.
I was wrong. I kind of think the Lakers made the playoffs.
Oh, Nate Rabbits. I was wrong. If they didn't.
What's that, Luke? You hope they don't?
No, I mean, I actually think it would be worse for the Lakers as a team if they made the playoffs as an eight seed and got swept, than if they did. Than if they didn't, you know, didn't make the playoffs. Why? Because I think if they didn't make the playoffs, it's no different than them getting swept, you know, as like an eight seed.
No, I agree.
So at least they can just see the season as just a crap hole and just get rid of it, you know.
Right, yeah. Rebuild, right?
You know, yeah, exactly. Instead of having this hope like, well, you know, we won 8 out of 10 at the end of the year and Denver dropped off, so we got in. Maybe we are actually good next year. You know, it would do away with those types of, you know, questions and ideas and just get rid of this team.
Yeah, Luke, I think you bring up a good point. It's kind of like deficit spending in the government. At some point, you have to, like, face the piper, like the Bulls did after the Jordan era, like the Spurs may do when they're big three. I mean, they haven't got a real, like, superstar guy in a few years, and the Lakers are looking that dead in the face, because if the Dwight Howard thing doesn't work out, I mean, I'm sure they'll try to sign him, and that'll probably end up working out, but they want to build around Dwight Howard and Kobe, but they have no money to do a lot of other stuff. They have money tied up in guys like Ron, when Meta World Peace. Is Meta's last year of the contract this year, Andy, or does he have one more?
I think he might have one more. See, he signed for five.
So you got Meta then for one more.
Yeah,
who's making
an exception for five.
And then you got Powell making a ton of money. And the reality is that the depth on this roster isn't going anywhere, because they keep trying to reload to put guys around Kobe at the end of his career. And I think the question that the hard question they're going to have to ask themselves after this year is, do we continue to try to reload around Kobe? Because he's not going to accept any less than that. Or do we try to do something else, like you were saying, Luke, as far as rebuilding?
Well, they're actually talking about, well, not them per se.
Fans?
People are talking about Dwight Howard actually being tradable.
Like
now.
Like a sign and trade.
Would you rather trade Dwight Howard or Pau Gasol?
Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
He's had way less injuries. I know Powell's been injured a little bit this year, but Dwight's had way less injuries.
I still
injuries.
Think you can build a defense around Howard, though, once he's healthy. Powell has just become, to me, yes, Powell is very skilled offensively, but it seems like now that he's played with Kobe for a while, he's kind of taken on his complain face, you know, personality. It seems like Powell has gotten really soft around the basket. Mm-hmm. His knees might be hurting him a lot, but he can't jump. You know, he's getting blocked by guys that are shorter than him. He's never really been.
Here's my problem with Dwight Howard.
But I just hate the body language and the, oh, put his hands up in the air every single time. It's like, get back on defense. You're a professional. You get paid millions of dollars to do this. And you're standing under your own basket with your arms up in the air looking at a referee, and there's 9 guys going the other direction.
You guys should see Andy.
I mean, it's amazing.
Mount Stevens is about to explode right now. Rumbling and
you should see me when I'm
don't
actually
be sorry.
Watching the game.
Don't be sorry. This is good. Here's what I
don't
like about Howard.
Luke. I think Luke was trying to say
Howard
something.
Is at his best. I'm going to talk and then I'll let Luke talk. Sorry, Luke. Howard is at his best when he's at his most unhappy. In other words, when Stan Van Gundy was a taskmaster, and when he was calling every little play, and when he was making sure that guys were on point, He was coaching him hard. That was when Dwight Howard was at his least happy, but that was when he was playing the best he's ever played.
I can agree.
And
with that.
And with a coach like D'Antoni, he's not a taskmaster like that.
No,
at defensively.
He's free reign.
And so
unbridled. Go
and
ahead,
so now Dwight's going to go do whatever he wants to do and be happy, but he's not going to be winning. And I think I don't know that the two can go together.
I like that. That makes sense.
I kind of liken it to LeBron. He was happy for a while, his first year in Miami, right? He was happy in Cleveland, but he was never kind of that killer guy who was winning. Sorry, Luke, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Actually, I kind of did, but sorry, anyway. Luke, are you still there?
There's a misconception with Dwight Howard. I mean, and I think we all fell under it for a few years, but Dwight Howard, and I think I've said this before on other podcasts, and I know I'm sounding like a broken record, and I'm sure you guys, to some extent, are going to disagree, but Dwight Howard is not a franchise guy.
He's not.
Dwight Howard has never been a franchise guy. Dwight Howard has been a big body who's incredibly athletic and somewhat skilled, but I think he's always going to be offensively raw. And kind of a guy that was so young when he came in the league, we kept saying, okay, next year. You know, he was already an all-star, but as far as being a superstar, we were saying, okay, next year is going to be a year. He's going to come out, he's going to have to face up, you know, 12 to 15-foot game. You know what I mean? He's going to start to knock down some free throws, at least at a higher rate than whatever, 48% or whatever.
Do you think it's more attitude than it is talent, you know, for him, Luke? Do you think it's more attitude, and that's why he's not that number one franchise guy in your mind?
You know what? I don't know. I think that there's a lot of reasons why we sort of place these crowns on players like Dwight Howard's head. And he's really exciting.
Because he's crazy athletic, and you see all the potential right?
I think he does incredible things defensively. He can block shots. He's got the long arms, and he can jump off the roof for a big guy.
He can get you 20 boards.
He can rebound. Exactly. He's exciting.
He gets the easy boards, though. He gets the easy boards. And I know he works hard sometimes to get the hard ones, but.
And he has a body that, I mean, looks like Hercules. You know, I mean, so there's just that natural kind of Superman factor to him.
Sure.
But really, how real was all that? Even when he was in Orlando and they went to the finals that one year against the Lakers, tell me, who was the best player on the Magic that, you know, during that playoff run?
Hedo Turkoglu.
Not Dwight Howard. It was Hedo Turkoglu. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. But none of us want to talk about Hedo Turkoglu.
Even Nelson probably, you know, played a little bit.
It was Dwight Howard. You know what I mean? So yeah. I just think the Lakers got pretty much what they paid for. I mean, this is Dwight Howard.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Luke. I think, you know, the comparisons with Shaq, you know, Dwight Howard's not half the player Shaq was. Shaq had a much more developed offensive game. Shaq could make a turnaround, you know, 15-footer. He shot that shot all the time.
No, Shaq talked the talk, but he walked the walk.
Right, at least for a few years. Right. And for being a physical specimen, Shaq was mentally walking the walk when the Lakers were winning the championships. I don't know if Dwight will ever get there. I think it's a question. And now you're talking about a Laker team 3 years from now that might not have Kobe, that Dwight Howard maybe is the guy you're building around, but now you're the Knicks or something. Now you're kind of mediocre, right?
You have no Kobe, you have no Nash. Yeah. You probably end up trading Powell at that point, you know.
Or let him, yeah. So
Meta's gone.
So maybe you sign a free agent, but we've seen in the NBA now, guys aren't signing, you know, leaving their current team for free agency because they can make more money with their current team. So it has to be a sign and trade if it's going to happen. And the Lakers have no more tradable pieces. And now you're going to be looking at a early 90s kind of situation, I think, for the last part of this decade, where you're having to draft in the, you know, 15 to 20 range, maybe the 13 to 20 range. You're having to draft guys like Anthony Peeler and Nick Van Exel, and you're going to have to flip those. You know, there's kind of another cycle that I think is closer on the horizon than Laker fans really think.
Yeah, but I think they do have the money to go out there and sign those young free agents that might, you know, be done with their first contract. And
yeah, but how appealing is it? I mean, I don't know. Does it lose some of its tarnish once Kobe's gone?
And to play in the, you know, the entertainment capital of the world.
But they don't get paid the most money to leave whatever their current team is.
But the Lakers can't afford to do it, is what I'm saying. Is if they're coming from, let's say, the Sacramento Kings, soon to be Seattle Supersonics, that are a team that maybe necessarily can't afford to pay maximum years and money. The Lakers are that team. So, I mean, that's not out of the question.
Here's where I think you have a danger zone, and I think we're always kind of on the ball here with it, is Kobe retires, say, in, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, maybe 4, which I hope not for Lakers fans' sake, because I think by then he'll be crippled. But Kobe retires in 2 or 3 years. You know, he's the man. He's the man there for the next couple of years, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and there's pressure the whole time he's there.
And then here's the thing. And then Dwight Howard's not getting any younger. You know, Dwight Howard's going to be 30, maybe 31 when Kobe retires.
And he's going to be an old 31.
He already has lingering back issues. So then you build around Dwight Howard. And as far as I'm concerned, yeah, the Lakers are the Lakers. They have they have that sticky name that, you know, draws players to Hollywood and whatever, but I think that they have a lot less You know, if you were to ask a player today, you know, would you go play for the Lakers? They would say, yeah, man, it's Hollywood, and they have Kobe Bryant. Now it's, you know, or 3 or 4 years from now, it's, hey, you want to go play for the Lakers? It's like, yeah, man, it's the Lakers. It's Hollywood. And you want to play with Dwight Howard? There's, like, no stickiness there.
Right,
like,
Dwight Howard or Blake Griffin?
Oh, we'll play with Dwight Howard. Exactly. Go play with Blake Griffin and, you know, and Chris Paul.
I think it's interesting. Here's an interesting thing. You mentioned Chris Paul. I think Chris Paul's got an opt-out this year. He's got an opt-out provision in his contract this year. And I'm really interested to see how sticky, to use your word, how sticky he is with the Clippers, how, you know, whether he starts saying, maybe wanting to go across locker rooms. He has no reason to now.
Stern will nix that one again.
He's got a choice here, though. I don't think Stern, because it wouldn't be a trade. But the Clippers are you know, going to be an interesting story because they have a real opportunity here over the next few years to really grab it away from the Lakers. We're going to take a quick break on fansmanship.com podcast. We're going to come right back and talk about the NFL playoffs. It's down to the Elite Eight in the NFL, the divisional round, and that's coming up this weekend. The 49ers are hosting a playoff game and some other stuff. We'll be right back on the fansmanship.com podcast.
So what is fansmanship.com?
Say what?
We're a sports website by the fans for the fans.
He wants to be a Laker.
For the Central Coast.
Catch the ball.
California.
The sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.
And beyond.
Tim Tebow.
We love sports. Fansmanship.com. By the fans. For the fans.
Flashing clip-on nipple piercing and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free.
Yeah. Fansmanship.com. By the fans.
The life for the sexiest pizza kid. See me come to your crib. You better greet with Terry. Take no lip. And I remember where you live. So you.
Welcome back to the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Exploited.
Here on Fansmanship.com.
That was the word I was thinking of.
Why isn't Mike D'Antoni exploiting Anton Jameson?
Why is he exploiting him? Why is he sitting
there? He's not exploiting his talents.
Well, he's sitting at the end of the bench, Mr. Sixth Man.
He's not exploiting a talent, you said?
Of Anton Jameson, he's sitting him down until he has to play center or power forward.
He puts him in for 3 minutes of the first quarter when Meta needs a rest and then takes him out and doesn't play the rest of the game.
Tonight?
The last few games, and then the five games before that, he didn't even play 1 minute.
Right, I remember that was in the LA Times. It's the Lakers are a soap opera. Another good story, though, and they're always, I guess, a good story in LA. Another big story across the country is, of course, the NFL playoffs, and we have the divisional round coming up this weekend.
That wasn't as good of a segue. I'm sorry.
I know. I efforted it, but it didn't really.
You're better than that.
Speaking of the Lakers trying to catch the the Nuggets, who are in eighth place, another team from Denver is playing this weekend. The top-seeded Denver Broncos. How about that for a second? Top-seeded Denver Broncos are hosting the Ray Lewis going-away party, Baltimore Ravens, in the first game. We also have the Patriots versus the Texans, the Falcons, number one seed in the NFC, hosting the Seahawks, and the local team, the 49ers, at home against the number three seed, the Packers. So let's start with the first game, guys. Peyton Manning went to the Broncos after the Tim Tebow circus last year. Tebow made the playoffs, but the Broncos undoubtedly made the right move, going to get Peyton Manning.
My biggest fantasy football steal of the year, Peyton Manning was my guy.
Huge, huge, huge.
He got him like the fifth and sixth round.
Huge pickup by the Broncos. They go 13-3, and they get the number one seed in the AFC. Huge for the Broncos. They host now the Ravens, and if there's a team that I think could win a game like this on adrenaline, on the fact that Ray Lewis doesn't want to lose his last game in Denver, it could be the Ravens. What do you think about this game, Andy?
Well, you know, as a number one seed, yes, it's a great advantage, but the Broncos even have a little bit more of an advantage because playing at Mile High is even more of an advantage, less oxygen.
And it's going to be cold.
It'll be cold, of course. You know, what I see is Peyton Manning kind of doing his thing. You know, Peyton Manning's the type of guy that'll figure out any defense. Doesn't matter how good the defense is. He will figure this team out. They will put up points. The Ravens could make a few plays. I could see a pick six or something happening. But I think the kind of missing storyline here that I haven't really heard too many people talking about yet is Joe Flacco, because Flacco kind of came out in the offseason saying, hey, I'm an elite guy. I think I'm the best quarterback in the league. I should be in that elite class, the Mannings, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Brady. I should be in that class. Well, here's your chance, Flacco.
Yeah.
Here's your chance, 13 for 29 for 176 yards and an INT. So
right.
We'll see.
Right. Yeah, we'll see what Flacco does. Luke, make a quick pick on this game, the Ravens or the Broncos?
All I have to say is Joe Flacco produces a 0.4 QBR in their last meeting. So I'm going to roll with a red-hot Peyton Manning and that just bitter cold over there in my high.
Yeah, here's my
bold QBR. I love it.
Here's my bold prediction for this game is that Flacco's going to have an amazing game and the Ravens are going to lose and everybody's going to blame Flacco. That's my prediction. Flacco's going to throw for like 290 to like 300, somewhere in there. He's going to throw for like three touchdowns, one interception, something like that. And the Ravens are going to lose probably like 35 to 21. The Ravens D just can't stop the
you
Broncos
offense. You
really
think offense. They're going to score 30? The Broncos are going to score 35 on the Ravens?
With Peyton, with two weeks to scout Ray Lewis's team, I think it's possible. And I think that
Owen betting the over.
I think that Flacco has a lot better game. I actually trust Flacco a lot. I think he's underrated still, despite what he says. And I think the Broncos still win, but that Flacco has a better than advertised game because the Broncos. Get ahead
so you think
early.
He's a little bit closer to what he thinks he is than what everyone else thinks he is?
And I think the Broncos in this game get ahead early, and the Ravens have to throw it. And so,
right, so that kind of takes Ray
Rice
a little bit
stats.
Out. Of it. Yeah.
Right, yeah, it's gonna be a big Flacco game numbers wise, but they're never,
you know,
really gonna
Ray
be
Rice
as
involved
much.
Early is a formula that they should be looking for.
They
as
should
well.
Be, but we'll
but
see.
It's not gonna,
we'll
yeah.
see. We'll see. The second game in the AFC is the second seed, the New England Patriots, against the third seed. Houston Texans. Houston started off the season really well, went to New England earlier in the year and lost. They're going to New England again. Luke, what do you think? Texans, Patriots.
Pass that to Andy. I just kind of cut my finger. I'll be right back.
All right.
Easy on yourself. It wasn't that bad of a take. No.
Oh gosh. hope you're okay, Luke. Andy, go.
Well,
Texans, Patriots.
Remember the game of the biggest game in franchise history for the Texans when they played at New England earlier in this regular season.
Right.
That's what Andre Johnson was calling it, the biggest game in the
because they had
the
same record. The Texans and the Patriots this year had the same record, and so the tiebreaker was the fact that the Patriots.
How can
beat
a regular
the
season game be the biggest game in the
in a franchise?
At any rate, I don't see anything different happening. You know, maybe Wade Phillips, defensive coordinator for the Texans, comes up with a few different wrinkles that might create an extra turnover or two. But I just think that the Patriots offense is just too high-powered. They can play from ahead. They can play from behind. One thing the Texans can't really do that well is play from behind. If they get
because they depend on Arian Foster
right,
so much, right?
Right. And he is a big part of their passing game, too. You know, you can compare him to Ray Rice that way. You know, they're pretty much the top two backs in the league that are, you know, the ultimate do-it-all type of guys. But I just see the Patriots having they're just a better football team, you know.
You see them getting
what,
over in this one.
What advantage do you see Houston having if you were right. to go down the list? Offense, right. defense, special teams, experience, right. all those different things. You'd be putting checkmark by New England. There's right. not one thing that I think Houston has over them.
Yeah, I agree. And yet I still think Houston's got a really great chance at this game because it's the NFL playoffs.
What's going to be different from the last time they played?
I don't know.
You don't
but
know? Turnovers?
I, yeah. Turnovers, I think a sense of urgency. I think being able to go to a place that you've been
to.
All
Hashtag first aid kit.
Do I need to call 911, Luke? Are you okay?
I'm back, guys. I'm back. I just got so excited that I started to bite my finger and it just bled.
Wow. Dude, intense conversation. I like it. That must mean that we're bringing it.
We're bringing it.
Drawn blood.
Luke, Texans or Patriots?
Arian Foster wrote this on his Twitter. 2012, 2013 New England Patriots just became the first team in NFL history to get back-to-back byes before advancing to the conference championship game. could this get any easier? I mean, seriously.
What
did
he?
Planets are aligned.
Did he?
Tomato cans are in place. The Frogs and Houston Texans are the only team standing between the New England Patriots and a trip to the AFC Championship game. All the Patriots have to do is beat the terrible Texans. 1 week from today at Gillette Stadium.
Arian Foster tweeted that this weekend.
This is what I have to say. Yes, this is what I have to say to Arian Foster.
Was that a quote from someone else, or is that just what he...
No, that was actually what he tweeted. On his he used it for his avatar. Basically, this is what I have to say to Arian Foster. Last time I watched that game, you got routed 44-13. The difference between you and the New England Patriots, the difference between Matt Schaub and Tom Brady, is the difference between a runway model and a really good-looking model who poses for, say, Target. I mean, honestly, when I saw that 44-13 route, when I saw that 44-13 route, whatever, a couple months ago, with just New England just absolutely shredded that defense.
Yep.
It's not even a toss up to me.
Okay.
I think it's pretty much Brady.
Luke, I have a question for you. Did you know that Arian Foster is basically the poet laureate of the NFL? And I know you being a guy who's into poetry. Have you ever read any of Arian Foster's poetry? And if you have, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I have. I've read some of Arian's stuff. I think he's really raw, and he probably hasn't focused much on it and really tried to hone his talent. But he definitely is talented. I mean,
he's not a thug poet or anything like that, right? I mean, come on.
He's a smart guy.
He has some metaphorical use in some of his poems that are interesting, but like I said, I think I don't know if he doesn't have the time or if he hasn't put in the time. I don't know. But he's definitely interesting, and he has some talent there.
So he needs to stick with poetry and not twittering and not tweeting nonsense about the Patriots and how easy it would be. I mean, he's trying to pump himself up, right?
I just think it's funny how he's mocking the Patriots and they got blown out. He's trying to make a point here, like, oh, no one expected to beat the Patriots because of, you know, we got blown out a couple months ago. But he got blown out for a reason. I mean, the last thing I should be reading is some tweet from you about how, you know, you feel ignored, you know? You guys are so ignored.
Then win a playoff game, right?
Yeah, give us a reason to pay attention.
Just win a playoff game. Exactly.
How deflating will it be if Houston goes to Foxborough and lays a complete egg, or if they just even lose? I mean, this was supposed to be kind of this team's year, and the NFL, you never know how long your window actually is, and that we don't have enough data about the Houston organization to know that whether they will be back anytime soon.
They're just not finishers.
For instance, like Pittsburgh, you know, they're not in it this year, but you know they'll be back with Roethlisberger at some point. Their organization's good enough. The Giants organization is always dangerous. But with Houston, you don't know how long that window is going to be open where they're dangerous. So I guess the question is, how deflating is it?
Well, they were the one seed pretty much the whole season. They had the best record in the AFC. And then they don't even get a bye. Then they end up a three seed. They're just not finishers. They're just not there yet.
And they won last week.
Yeah.
I mean, they were able to... To pick up the win over the Bengals, barely.
Barely.
Who did they beat this year? Name a team that they beat. The Colts. They were a playoff team, right? They beat the Colts at home.
A second, I'll find it.
They lost to the Packers. They got whooped by the Packers in Houston, right? Who have they beat? Yeah, you know, I mean, I just don't see them as finishers, and even with the opportunity to be a one seed, and if they were playing at home.
See, the NFC's, you know, for as fun as the AFC always is to talk about, the NFC's always, I feel like, so wide open. You got teams like the Giants that jam through the NFC. You got the Seahawks at the Falcons. Luke, the team from the Pacific Northwest.
The call of the rogue Seahawk.
Defending little Seahawk.
Oh, man.
Seahawks at the Falcons. Falcons were 13-3. Seahawks were 11-5.
I don't have any faith in the man known as Matty Ice.
You know what this? You know what the Falcons to me?
Any faith.
Yeah, go ahead.
Matty Ice. Yeah. And man, I don't know how anybody can't think that Seahawks team is pretty exciting and compelling. So I'm going with the underdogs. I'm going with the Seahawks. I think that their defense looks fantastic, and Russell Wilson looks obviously, you know, great, and they have one of the best running backs in football.
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch is great.
Beast
yeah,
mode.
So, you know, I'm gonna take the rookie upstart over
nice.
Matty Ice.
Nice.
He's been heralded unfairly throughout the entirety of his career.
Did you guys ever think that? You know, with these two great rookie quarterbacks, RG3, Andrew Luck, that we'd be talking about Russell Wilson
about as much as I thought Cousins.
Right.
Kirk Cousins.
In January. I think the Seahawks are kind of that team, and we've seen it in the NFC over the past few years. There's been that team that's kind of come in, got in the playoffs, final week, got hot at the right time, a la the New York Giants when they won, a la the Green Bay Packers when they won. I kind of see the Seahawks as that team. Yeah. So I'm definitely taking the Seahawks. The Falcons just have never proven that home field advantage is anything that they take advantage of. The whole Matty Ice nickname. I mean, win something. I'm tired of this Matty Ice stuff.
Well, it's the same thing as the Texans. Except that the Falcons
yeah, they don't call him,
anything.
You know, Slick Shabby or something. He doesn't
or
have
Matty
some
Ice.
Stupid name.
His name's
you
Matt,
know?
Too. And he used to be a Falcon.
Right.
I think the Falcons and the Texans are kind of mirror image programs, mirror image organizations, where they're decently run, they're decently coached.
I thought that all season,
they have,
too.
They have solid quarterbacks. They both got into the playoffs. They both had really good regular seasons, although Houston fell off a little bit at the end. I think I'm going to go with the Falcons in this one. I think
they both have dynamic offensive threats. Arian Foster, Julio Jones, and, you know, guys
yeah,
like that. Roddy White.
Yeah, Roddy White and Julio. Between Roddy White and Julio Jones, I think Seattle's cornerbacks aren't going to be able to keep up.
Their defense is like above average, but they've never done anything. They've never proven anything.
Right, and they play in a dome, so that's always kind of a knock. If you play in a dome, it's really hard to win a Super Bowl. So, although Indianapolis did it. They were the first one, right? The first dome team to win a Super Bowl. I think. I think for a lot of reasons.
I'd have to think about that.
For a lot of reasons, Atlanta pulls this one out. The last but not least, we have the game up at the stick. The 49ers are going to be hosting the Packers in what's kind of a classic matchup of NFC powers for the last 15 years.
They've been great games.
They've been really good games. Yeah, awesome games.
But it's been one-sided.
That's
what I keep trying to tell Niner fan. You know, it was the Owens.
Yeah. Was that the catch? Yeah, that was the catch, right?
That was the first time that they beat Green Bay. I think it goes back to about 1995, I want to say. Green Bay had beat them, I believe, 10 or 11 times in a row. Yeah. And then there was the Owens game. And then the Packers won a couple more. And then this year, the Niners beat them in the regular season in week one.
In week one, yeah.
So I think in their last 15 matchups, it's the Packers are like 13-2.
Really?
So it's that lopsided. I remember going to the game in 1996 when Favre and the Packers beat San Francisco in the playoffs.
It was always the Packers, the Niners, or the Cowboys in the 90s.
Right.
That was like that was what you could basically hang your hat on.
Well, that was the year that the Packers finally got over the hump and beat Dallas because they had lost to Dallas two or three years in a row every year in the playoffs.
So
beat Dallas in Dallas, went to San Francisco, beat them.
Five Rays coming out party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But at any rate, I don't know if I trust Kaepernick. I mean, he can make plays, but, you know, that's what I've told all my Niner fan friends that just have stars in their eyes. You have a rookie quarterback that's not a great passer, and what if you guys get behind? What if Aaron Rodgers comes out, you know, starts putting dimes
doing whatever he wants.
Putting dimes all over the place, throwing, you know, underthrown fades, all the throws that he has.
Right.
They get up a couple scores. Colin Kaepernick's going to bring you back.
And for everybody to know, Andy's diehard Packer fan. I mean, grew up
since the days of Don Majkowski.
Since the Majkowski
days. Magic man with the golden mullet.
So I agree with you, Andy. And I'm not a Niner fan, but I have in-laws that are. And it was a question I asked when Kaepernick got the starting role and when he got to keep it. I said, is that the right thing to do? It may be it may be for the long term the right thing to do, and the 49ers may have, you know, seven out of the next 10 years in the playoffs. But to win a Super Bowl this year, I don't believe it was the right thing to do. Alex Smith had his highest quarterback rating. At, you know, when he got hurt, he was playing the best he has ever played.
I remember one game was like 20 of 22 for 290 yards.
That was the game before
touchdowns.
He got hurt.
Yeah.
That was the game before he got hurt. So to say that Kaepernick's not going to give you a better chance, I don't see it. I think that there's a reason why Alex Smith was the number one pick, because people thought he was capable of being that guy, and I thought he was finally starting to show that he could be that guy. And this is what I hate about the NFL, is it's always about kind of what could be.
I think Harbaugh sold on the fact that Kaepernick has that extra dynamic.
But he's a rookie.
He's got the feet.
But he's a rookie,
right?
Like you said, and I just don't see it happening.
And he's
able
to mold him completely.
Here's my take on this game. If the 49ers win this game, the 49ers are in the Super Bowl. If Kaepernick wins this game, he takes the momentum to either Atlanta, or they play at home against Seattle, which would be a great game too.
That would be a great game.
But
I might take Seattle there in that situation.
If the 49ers win this game, they go to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. Luke, what's your take on the Kaepernick-Smith thing?
Okay, before I explain my take, let me just get these two thoughts out of the way.
My hand is killing me.
The Niners have an incredible defense. There, I said that. Okay, the second point is Colin Kaepernick, you're right, does have an extra dynamic that Alex Smith does not have, and he is exciting. And there are moments when he plays with so much passion, it makes me excited just to watch him, you know? But I really think that was the worst move Jim Harbaugh could have made was giving Colin Kaepernick the ball, because this is what I think Colin Kaepernick did. And this is actually a compliment to him as a football player. I think Colin Kaepernick over-diversified an already diverse offense. When you had Alex Smith playing that poised kind of quarterback role, dropping back and slinging those little 5 to 10 yard, you know, quick routes to Frank Gore or to Crabtree or to Vernon Davis, you know, over the top, and then Mario Manningham, it was all about yak. It was all about yards after the catch. And now bringing in a player like like Kaepernick, who can scramble and so on and so forth, which is great. He's a diverse quarterback with a strong arm. It seems like when I watch them, they have so many offensive weapons. Then you have other offensive weapons, and it's almost like Jim Harbaugh and the offensive coordinators are like, shoot, like, okay, do we have Kaepernick run out of like a boot, or do we, you know, get Crabtree involved? It's almost like they're confused as to who to get involved sometimes.
Yeah,
I just liked their team before, when Smith was playing that poised quarterback role and Gore and those guys were just producing offense because they're gifted, yards after the catch, and they were still relying on their defense. And so because of that, in my long-winded way, I'm taking Aaron Rodgers and his, you know, season. He's seasoned. The former MVP, I'm taking Rodgers. I'm taking that Packers team that I think has quietly had a fantastic year behind the scenes. They're hot. I'm taking the Pack.
Well, I think if Green Bay can protect the passer, they're going to have a great shot, because the Niners do rush the passer very well, even with just their front four. They run a lot of games and like stunts up front, what we used to call the thumbs stunt, which is tackle first, end around, ears would be end first, tackle around. And they'll bring Alden Smith kind of down the middle. They'll use Justin Smith to occupy the guard and then bring the end around and wrap it right down the middle.
Right.
If they can protect that stunt that they do a lot and a lot of their other blitzes, I see the Packers definitely taking it to them.
Yeah, I think the protection is going to be a huge thing, Andy. And whether Justin Smith is back or whether he's not, right? Because he was out the last game, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we'll make a big difference if they can protect Aaron Rodgers. I see Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball pretty well. I think the Seahawks threw the ball pretty well on the 49ers the last time they played him. I watched that game. So the 49ers are definitely vulnerable, and the Packers have the weapons to do it. But I think Kaepernick, you know, as much as I think he could also, as much as I think he could be, you know, clearly the wrong choice, I think it would be really cool too if a rookie like him stepped up and played really well, and a lot of people around here would be really happy about it. I think the chances of that are maybe like 1 out of 4, maybe 25%.
This is amazing that 4 rookie quarterbacks made the playoffs.
That's pretty incredible.
And the ones that we thought that we would be talking about, the two we thought we'd be talking, we're not even talking about. No. We're talking about Kaepernick and Wilson. That's kind of, it's amazing what the NFL has evolved into. Remember, no more than like 5 years ago, you wouldn't, I mean, a rookie quarterback making the playoffs, heck, rookie quarterback was, even starting
right.
was like
remember
crazy.
When Steve McNair got drafted and they're like, we're going to let him sit for like 4 years.
Right.
And then he can learn how to play quarterback, and then he can play like
exactly.
4 years later.
That was
we're just
going to
sit him on the bench behind Jeff George for a while.
Got to learn
and,
the ropes.
Yeah, it's not even close to that anymore. And it's a testament to the college game. And it's, the status quo has definitely changed. Guys, before we go, I just want to give a quick plug. The Fansmanship podcast, if you've made it this far, is on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can go to Stitcher.com and you can search for the Fansmanship.com podcast. It's a great app for your iPhone or your Android phone where you can download it. You can set up stations where you can put the Fansmanship podcast on a customized station with, like, I don't know, the Dan Patrick Show or whatever you want to do, any other show.
Toss us in there behind
Dan. Yeah, toss us in or in front of. It doesn't matter. Yeah, whatever you want to do. And
we'll open for Dan.
And you can just hit play, and it'll just play all the shows that you like in a row, which is pretty cool. I definitely use it. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so it's definitely a way that you can do that if you've made it this far. Stitcher.com, or you can just download the Stitcher.
You made it this far. See the wall and go through
Stitcher
it.
Stitcher app. You can also find us on iTunes and of course, on our website, which is going to be new and improved. Possibly by the time this comes out, guys, you could be listening to this on the new and improved fansmanship.com website, the revamped, rebuilt from the ground up, just for your viewing pleasure, fansmanship.com website. I think
you sound like a sticker you'd slap on a bottle of Windex. New and improved, with like the squiggly lines around it with three exclamation points.
Maximum formula. Luke, closing thoughts.
Closing thoughts.
My finger hurts.
I need a Band-Aid.
I got blood everywhere.
Neosporin.
My finger hurts, and I took that one for the team.
Yeah.
And
sometimes you got to sacrifice.
I officially love San Luis Obispo even more, spending all this time in Los Angeles, and just because I just love the peacefulness of slow.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Closing thoughts would be, how surprising are the Mustang men, basketball wise, with Joe Calero. I'm incredibly impressed.
3-0, right?
Surprised in a good sense. Not surprised that Calero can rally these guys, because I really believe in his ethic, his work ethic as a coach and his philosophy, his defensive grittiness. But I'm just so impressed with Eversley's growth and the team defense I'm seeing. And
how some new guys have kind of stepped into roles, huh? Guys that weren't even a factor last year.
Their roles, and obviously they knocked off UCLA, and then last night was the big deal. They were actually recognized on the second installment of bracketology.
Oh, I saw that.
Which, if you're from this area, but especially if you're not, I just want to say, if you're listening, that to all of us who are from San Luis Obispo, where Cal Poly Flow is the only major university. That is a huge deal for us as Mustang fans.
So, sure, and basically what they do for that, for the one big conference is they slot in whoever's got the best regular season record, because anybody could win the tournament, but they could have put Cal Poly or Hawaii, and they put Cal Poly, so
yeah,
can feel good.
I think I remember
that.
The last time that they got this kind of exposure, aside from them beating UCLA this year, what year was it? About, God, I want to say 7-8 years ago, where they
03,
were
04.
They were playing
the
Utah
stock
State.
Opera. The stock opera year.
Utah State in the tournament final. Varney Dennis was going off.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2003.
Yeah, 2003.
Dennis and stock opera. I remember I was in college. I might have actually been in Las Vegas during that
game.
I can picture myself in I can picture myself in like a restaurant
or
bar somewhere.
Stock opera wasn't on that team.
He wasn't, okay.
I think it was
Barney. Barney was the main guy, but they were more defensive minded. I think they lost that game like 57-54.
It was a close game.
It came down to the end. I remember that.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
I was watching with Schubert. He wasn't even paying attention to the game.
He was
probably shirtless at that point.
The game was in full effect.
Drew's pouring free shots. Him and Strange at the bar.
Closing thoughts for you two. I want to hear your guys' closing thoughts here.
My closing thoughts are that it was interesting. I didn't get to watch it, but a Cal Poly recruit was on ESPNU this last weekend. Markel Leonard plays for Salesian High School up north, and they went out to DC and played a game out there. And Markel follows Fansmanship on Twitter, I think. So that was pretty cool. I got to, you know, he played out there, and that was pretty cool to be able to see a guy who's going to Cal Poly. He's a point guard. He seems like he's a pretty good shooter. He'll probably be a lot like kind of a Jamal Johnson-esque, except he has maybe a little bit better jumper from the outside. Uh-huh. Is kind of what I'm seeing. And he's right-handed instead of left-handed. But he got to play on TV this weekend. And while I think that high school games on national TV are silly, I honestly do. I'm not like a huge proponent of that. I think it's pretty cool that Cal Poly fans get to see kind of one of their players who's coming here next year. All right, Speaking of Cal Poly basketball.
Two closing thoughts for me. It's great that our websites, I mean, Joan Rivers' snare drum of a face got nothing on our facelift we got coming up. So.
Oh.
Booyah. Boom shakalaka. Number two, and I know Owen doesn't like to beat his own drum. Segue. Owen's going to be getting some radio time coming up here. I think he's going to be on CJ's show with Josh next
Scroggins.
Wednesday.
Yeah, and I don't know if Scroggins is going to be able to make it. So, yeah, hopefully. I'm hoping to be on CJ's show next Wednesday.
And then you're also doing play-by-play.
And you're going to talk to Chris Broussard, right? Chris Broussard?
Yeah. I'm Chris Broussard. Kobe Bryant.
Chris Broussard, right?
He is not doing the things that he needs to do.
You guys are killing me.
Sorry. I just Chris Broussard kind of, I mean, I won't.
Chris Broussard.
I won't get into it.
Anyway, like Chris Broussard.
Number two, Owen's getting to do some play-by-play with...
Yeah, high school play-by-play maybe with Waz. That's coming up. I might even be able to do that even as early as this week.
So things are happening. It's getting crack-a-lacking.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, stick with fansmanship.com. Put it in your bookmarks. Go to it. We're getting fresh content on most days now, and so it's definitely something to take a look at. We're hoping to be able to help you scratch your sports itch and be a regular thing that you guys are going to. So visit fansmanship.com early and often. And
scratch that itch.
On that note.
Wrap that cut in a Band-Aid, right, Luke?
And speaking of wrapping, I think that's a wrap for us for Luke Johnson and Andy Stevens. I'm Owen Main. This is the Fansmanship.com podcast.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place. So bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to troubled town. Oh, can't find my way around troubled. Front page of the news.